ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
So generally, for most people, as they grow older, we all gain about half to a kilo every year. And that creep, so to speak, has been occurring for decades now. So as we get older, we can expect that all to happen to all of us. And it's that weight creep that also has an impact on your experience of living with osteoarthritis, both in terms of pain, the function, your likelihood of having surgery related to your osteoarthritis, and ultimately many other outcomes related to the disease. There are good physiologic reasons as to why that weight creep occurs and why it's hard to keep weight that you've lost off. And we're going to dig into that a little bit today, as well as the reasons for that weight creep, and try to also provide you some suggestions as to ways that you might prevent that additional weight from occurring. So today we're joined by Professor Flavia Cicatini, and Flavia is a rheumatologist and currently the head of the musculoskeletal unit at Monash University and head of rheumatology at Alfred Health. Hello, Flavia. Welcome to the show.
Thanks very much, David.
Oh, it's a great pleasure to have you along. Good chance to have a chat, but primarily in the listener's interest, but also to some extent mine, to get to know you a little bit better. Can you share with the listeners a little bit more about your background and what a typical day looks like?
Yeah, so I'm a rheumatologist and I also do research. So my day isn't typical because I have lots of different things I do. So I have some days that I do clinical work. So I might see patients in outpatients. I do ward service. That changes things because you're looking after patients in the hospital. But then often, you know, a lot of the time is looking after students, either medical students or Master of Public Health students, doing teaching. I do research. I supervise projects. So it's quite fun in that way that no one day is exactly the same.
Do you enjoy the variety?
Yes. Yeah. I like the variety. I think that each of the jobs is different. And interestingly, although they all sound like a hodgepodge, they actually feed on each other.
Yeah. I mean, I think particularly that clinical interface with the research, I think we learn a lot from that clinical interaction with our patients.
Yep, I agree.
Yeah. Now, Flavia, when you're not at work, what do you enjoy doing?
So I really enjoy gardening, and I like bright coloured flowers. You wouldn't believe it at all that I might like that. So I like roses and geraniums, and it's all a bit chaotic. I don't like things that are very orderly. And I also like spending time with people. So my family spend a lot of time. We have meals often with people, and so with family and friends. So that social connectedness, and I like exercising, particularly things like walking. And so I've got, most of us are a bit time poor. As I'm getting older, I have a little bit more time, but all those things give me a lot of pleasure.
Wonderful, wonderful. And if you had to describe yourself in 5 words, what would they be?
I'm generally positive. I'm reasonably fair. I tend to worry about things but get things done. And I like color.
So for anybody who doesn't know Flavia, my image of you is always someone who's got color, as distinct from a lot of people who go around to the conferences in the blacks, the grays. You always distinguish yourself by having plenty of color.
When you wrote the question about how to describe myself, I was going to say colorful, but that implies a colorful personality. But I thought I would just say I like color.
That's fantastic. Fantastic. All right. Now, for the listeners, and we'll include a link to this in the show notes, this conversation has been prompted by an article that Flavia and colleagues have just had published. And again, that link will be in the show notes. If you want to dig a little bit further, please do so. But it's really about this concept of creep in weight and what we can do about it. But before we get into that, I'm just wondering if you could reinforce a little bit about the benefits of weight loss and weight maintenance for osteoarthritis.
Yeah. So obesity is probably one of the biggest reversible risk factors for osteoarthritis. So that is fact, fact, fact. No one argues with that. And in fact, consumers already know it. It's not a state secret. When we've spoken to patients in the clinics, even at the places like the Alfred Public Clinics and so on, everybody actually knows that. And most people have tried to lose weight. They know that their obesity is contributing to their problem. So that is fact. Now, we know that losing weight is difficult. We know that if you lose weight, you get a bit of an improvement in your joint pain. One of the things that has bothered me for a long time is that we see patients in our clinic. We don't have a lot of treatments to offer when we say lose weight and exercise. And the person goes off and they come back, and you and I are old enough that we've been in the clinic for long enough that we're seeing the same people over many years. You develop a nice relationship. They come back 10 years later, they've gained 5 kilos. Not only have they not lost weight, they've gained it. Now, that has always bothered me as a missed opportunity. Now, also, I have been fascinated by the idea that repeatedly beautiful, beautiful randomized trials have shown really poor, if little effect of weight loss on knee pain and so on. Recently, meta-analyses, big studies that have combined studies, have showed that yes, losing weight's a good idea, and we all agree it's a fantastic idea, but the effects are not very big. And you probably need to lose something like 7.5% of your body weight to have much effect on knee pain itself. And so just because weight loss doesn't have a fantastic effect on osteoarthritis doesn't mean obesity is not a problem. It is a problem. But the problem is that by the time we start suggesting that people lose weight and so on, people will be in their 40s or 50s. They come to see us. They've already got osteoarthritis. And so there's already been damage and other problems happen. So it's probably too little too late. I was struck a number of years ago, we did a study where we just followed people, and we found that losing weight had a bit of an effect, and not that was all very exciting, but gaining weight seemed to have quite a big effect. And what we often forget is that when you stand on your knee, you load 4 times your weight. So, for example, if I'm sitting around and I'm, hey, carrying whatever weight I do, if I gain another 2 kilos, I'm going to be loading an extra 8 through that joint. So it's probably not surprising that as we gain weight, pain gets worse. Anyway, and so to simply say that, is obesity important? Yes. Is it a bad thing? But the WHO, the World Health Organization, reminds us that to tackle the problem of obesity, we should be preventing weight gain. We should be trying to keep our weight, and we should be losing weight. But we focus on the weight loss. And so just to recap, is obesity a problem? Yes. Should we all be losing weight and becoming trim, taut, and terrific? Yes. Is that going to happen? No, because people try. But on the other hand, you know, what's fascinating, if you turn around, you suddenly look at all the evidence, isn't that someone goes to sleep one day and the next day they've gained 10 kilos. There's this really slow creep. So there are times in people's lives where we put on more weight. So there's the college 15 or something. So young kids go to college and suddenly put on a lot of weight. Women, after they have a baby, often gain some weight and so on. So there are some tipping points in our life. But over and above, you know, the evidence in the US where people are big is that they gain about 0.5 to 1 kilo a year. In Australia, it's the same thing. And yet we've sort of almost shut our eyes to it, that we're so busy telling everybody to lose weight that we've forgotten that the same person in 10 years is going to come back having gained weight. And then we're going to say, oh, Mrs. Jones, you need to lose weight. But if they hadn't gained the 5, they wouldn't have to be losing it.
Yeah, no, it's a great description. And I guess just to reinforce that, obviously overweight and obesity has a big impact on osteoarthritis, both the development of it, also your risk of joint replacement, the experience of pain, and weight loss can play an important role. And I guess as Flavia is saying, on average, a community gains about 0.5 to 1 kilo a year and has been presumably doing so for decades. Why do people continue to gain weight, and why is weight maintenance difficult?
Look, it's really, really fascinating. So I'm going to take a step back and answer a question you haven't asked me, which follows on from that. So, for example, if you have somebody who needs to lose 5 or 6 kilos or 7 kilos, everybody trundles along. And this is not what we know as doctors. This is what we see with family and friends. Everybody's able to lose. If you lose your first 2 or 3 kilos and you're as happy as a pig in mud, okay? But then all of a sudden you can't lose it anymore. And we all now know that you can't just try and lose weight gradually. If you really want to lose weight, you've got to go to these very low energy diets. So you need to put a massive amount of work and then you can lose weight, okay? And that is because the minute we start to lose weight, all of a sudden, all these mechanisms say, you're starving, you're going to die because you're starving. And there are all these hormonal mechanisms that suddenly halt the progress. So we all know that. So then everybody loses weight and everybody is as happy as anything because you look trim, taut and terrific, having put a massive amount of effort to lose weight. But then there's been this assumption that the reason people gain weight is because everybody goes back to their usual lives and, you know, and are not as, but it was interesting because some of the obesity people thought to themselves, but this can't be the case. Anybody who loses a massive amount of weight are determined, have worked really hard. Everybody wants to be slim. And what happens is that as soon as you lose weight, there's a whole series of hormones that change. So that the aim of your body is to get you back to your set point. So if you weigh 80 kilos and lose 10 kilos, your body systems say your set point is 80. If you lose 10, you're starving, bad thing. Now, that's why people very quickly start to regain weight. And this was shown a number of years ago by Joseph Poeta, where they looked at the hormonal changes. But what's fascinating is these hormone changes don't change for a year. 6 years later, your body's still trying to get you back to the original weight. So to lose weight is hard, but to keep it off is even harder and needs a concerted effort for many, many years. Now, we know that with the new weight loss drugs, the same happens. You stop it, you regain the weight quite quickly. But what's fascinating is that our body set points, the body weight set points, are aimed at protecting the weight web, our current weight. So if, for example, you gain 5 kilos, in a year or so, your set point is your weight, 5 kilos. So for some reason, our evolutionary mechanisms follow our set point up. And there's evidence that, for example, people that have lost weight for years with gastric operations and that, you take the staples away, they return to the set point. So it's interesting. There's no evidence anything resets us slower. So that's how why it's so hard for one to lose weight, but two to keep it off, because you've got to keep working for years to keep it off. But secondly, what's interesting is no one knows what the mechanism for that slight overshoot is. So for example, to maintain your weight, you know, on average is possible. So if you had a choice to either let things go and gain 5 kilos and then come back down, that is harder to do than stop that 5 kilogram drift. But that 5 kilogram drift needs people to be very aware that, one, you're not going to let that happen, and to be conscious about it and do things like just be aware. It's about a 4% of your calorie intake that you have to modify.
And Flavia, do we have any data in osteoarthritis as to the merits and benefits of maintaining a weight as opposed to letting the creep of a kilo a year happen?
Well, there's not a lot of data. And I can just tell you about 2 studies we did. So, you know, it's always better if it comes from lots of different people. But our group have been quite interested in this idea. So it's all very well to say, oh, don't gain the weight and all the rest. And we know that has to be good for you and it makes sense. But there's 2 studies. So there was a study of a low intensity lifestyle program done in rural women called Help Her. So it was a clinical trial, and women basically from the age of 18 to 55 or so were just in this program aimed to prevent weight gain. It was done by some of our colleagues in that community population. We added knee pain questionnaires, and these weren't people with osteoarthritis, but it's surprising how many people in minding their own business in the community have some knee pain. And what we found is that the people, about a third of the women reported having some knee pain, enough that you scored, yes, I've got some. And we found that the group that were in the arm that didn't gain weight had almost halving of their knee pain. Now, this was from a low level. Now, you could say, oh, that's not osteoarthritis. No, but what we do know is that anybody who has knee pain, it starts a circle, that vicious circle. You know, you've got a bit of knee pain, it's better one day, you get a bit of muscle wasting, you stumble along, hurt the knee. So knee pain itself, which might be like 1 out of 10, almost unmeasurable, it does tend to feed on a pathway. So that's one piece of evidence. And these weren't people select, these were just community-based women minding their own business in a rural community. So I thought that was quite interesting. The second piece of evidence is a paper that we published in your journal, David, Osteoarthritis and Cartilage. So what we did is in Melbourne, there's a big study of 40,000 people that was started, the Melbourne Collaborative Cohort Study. And it's a community-based population. They're interested in cancer, cardiovascular disease, run by the Anti-Cancer Council. That population is very well characterized, 40,000 people. It was possible to find out what people's weight was, self-reported weight at the age of 18. Now, it was done by really super-duper epidemiologists that had validated that this was correct, you know, that it was a pretty good estimate based on diabetes and other stuff. So what we did is we You can throw data into a computer, and rather than saying you're heavy or not, you can develop trajectories or pattern of weight gain. And so in this population of 40,000 people, we looked at people that were what their weight was at 18 and what their weight was at 85. The computer spat out different patterns of weight, et cetera. Not surprisingly, the people that were chubby when they were younger, chubby when they were older, had more knee replacements, you know, 10 times as many as the people that were slim at the beginning and slim later. So you say, oh, isn't that surprising? And that's, we get very excited about that, and we focus on those chubbies. But they only represented like 10% of the whole population. In fact, most of the joint replacements were happening in the people we don't even notice. The people who are all right, weight, yeah, good weight at young and end up with a BMI of 30, 32, 33. That's where all the joint replacements end up. And so we asked a different question and we said, well, let's forget about keeping the whole community trim, taut and terrific. Let's just make everybody go down one category. So if you were, you know, ended up with a BMI that was a bit heavy, you go down to your next category down, how many joint replacements can we prevent? And in fact, 30% of joint replacements in Australia could be prevented if we just got people not to get as heavy as they ended up with, which ended up something like 8 to 12 kilograms from the age. And of course, most of the action is in the, not the super chubbies. It's in the people that have just, you know, category one obesity, you know, BMI of under 35. And interesting, it's a group which as a community, we don't really target.
Yeah, no, it's a really good point. And just for viewpoint of clarification, the BMI that Flav is referring to is just body mass index. And typically the way we categorize people, and that's based on kilograms per meter squared, but the way we usually would categorize someone as obese is if their body mass index is above 30. So Flav, you've probably already touched upon it with talking about those two studies a little bit, but how do we prevent the weight creep? How do we stop or slow that from occurring?
So just to put this in perspective, there are multiple clinical trials that have shown it is possible to do, and it actually requires small, very simple lifestyle intervention. So that's what I would like to just point out. So there is evidence it's possible to do, and there's also, and it's been and included in meta-analyses and that, so combining the data. So I'd like to say that it's possible to do. I think for me, the key is not how we do it. It's to let people know so consumers have a choice. So for example, at the Alfred where I work, for many, many, many years now, I and all the people I've trained with and chat to and all the rest, we see people with knee osteoarthritis and we say, you're carrying a bit of extra weight. It would be good for you to take it off because it's also good for cardiovascular risk, for your general health. So we still say that. But what I and most of the people I've worked with now also say to people, but just know that, yes, you should lose weight, but you need to be aware that if you don't take some action, you're going to gain weight. Now, I'm not going to tell anybody how they're going to do it or how they're not going to do it. All I'm simply saying is when you say that to patients, their eyes light up and they light up because for the first time, someone has suggested something they might be able to do. Now, I hate to say, it sounds ridiculous, but that is why all the young staff at the Alfred do that. Not because I suggested it, but because it's really interesting that nobody has ever said it. So when you say, what should we do? There are lots and lots and lots of things we people can do. But the first thing is people need to be aware that it is a important, useful goal before we even start. Yeah. Because the beauty, I think, of that is that people can then, if we pushed it harder, it gives people an achievable goal, and it involves a personalized approach. So you're not saying go away and eat a whole lot of lettuce leaves. You're really starting to say, look, be aware. You need to take action. You know, if you go out on a weekend and have a big, you know, lots of dinners and stuff, you wake up on Monday morning and you're not hungry, don't eat. You know, because your body systems will try and get you back to that sort of weight. You know, if you go and have dinner, choose a smaller plate and then have a slightly smaller serve, not of healthy food, of what everybody else is having, but just a bit less. Then wait before you have a second serve. Or alternatively, go for a walk. So, for example, on average, the weight creep is calculated to be about 7 calories per day, which translates to 2 squares of Cadbury's chocolate a week or 15 minutes of exercise. So obviously someone's not going to suddenly eat 2 Cadbury squares less, but it just gives you an idea that the magnitude of the change is small. And if people are aware of it, then they can potentially choose, you know, like just be careful, you know, just think about what you're eating and why, weigh yeah. yourself, and just do a little bit more walking.
Yeah, no, it's a great description and hopefully helps people to be more mindful and make those subtle changes that make a big difference longer term. Flavio, is there any other comments you wanted to make or any resources that you would like to point people towards that might put this in a context that they can also digest, pardon the use of that word?
Well, what I can do, David, is we actually, just as part of a project, because this is something that's been quite close to my heart in terms of just the messaging, maybe I can send you a couple of videos, just YouTube videos
Fantastic.
That we made, which really just about, you know, preventing weight gain and just some ideas and preventing weight gain can reduce joint pain.
Yeah, that'd be great. And that way we can include them in the show notes and people can dig into that resource. Now, as is my penchant, I haven't managed my time particularly well, but wondering if you could just humor me with 2 questions. So why do you do what you do, Flavia? What's your primary motivation?
Well, I suppose, and I think a lot of people are like this, I've always wanted to make a difference, and I've always wanted to do something that might make a difference. And I suppose my ambitions weren't very high. I just wanted to do something little that might make a difference. So I think that motivates me. I think choosing osteoarthritis was a good one because it was, you know, there just isn't any treatment. It's a really tricky one. So, you know, I think that's partly the why do this combination of work.
Yeah, fantastic. And just in closing, is there any one piece of advice, knowledge or wisdom that you'd like to give for people out there who have osteoarthritis?
Yes. Walk. So keeping walking. So if your knee's sore, use a walking stick. Get out there, grab walking poles, use a walker. I think if you're able to keep active and walking, it's good for your mental health. It helps keep your muscles in good shape and it helps manage weight and so on. But I think keeping active, and I think walking's a really good one with whatever aid you need to tide you over when you've got sore joints.
Fantastic advice and great way to close. And Flavia, thank you so much for spending a little bit of time with us, sharing those insights, which I think are really hopefully important, but also, as you suggested, achievable and hopefully motivating for people out there who have osteoarthritis. Keep up the great work and look forward to seeing you soon.
Thanks, David. Bye, everyone.
So we know that weight loss can have big, meaningful effects on symptoms, on your likelihood of having a joint replacement, on complications related to surgery. And obviously has major benefits as far as your heart health, your diabetes, and a range of other health outcomes. As importantly, though, however, and potentially somewhat neglected, is this issue of weight creep. So this is the additional weight that you gain, about half to a kilo every year, that continues to accrue over many years and over time, slowly and insidiously, makes a difference to your osteoarthritis and your experience of this illness. It can have a big impact, and there are things that you can do to slow the gradual creep and the gradual additional weight down. I'm hoping you found the content of today helpful and informative. Please, by all means, dig into the show notes to find a little bit of additional information there about ways that you might go about slowing the weight creep. By all means, please reach out to us with additional questions or suggestions you have around the show. But between now and when we next speak,
thanks for listening,
please do take care
David
of yourself.
Hunter. If you like our show and want to know more, visit www.jointaction.info. If you have any questions, you can email us at hello@jointaction.info and follow us on Twitter at jointaction.org. This podcast was hosted by David Hunter, edited by Vicky Duong, music produced by Jordan Hunter. The information posted on this podcast is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent disease. Anyone seeking medical advice should consult a health professional.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.